Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the WM Briggs Show. 30 seconds late, I pressed the wrong button again. This week, another week in doom. It's been a very busy week in doom, so stick around. We have a lot to cover. Well, let's see here. I start every one of these weeks not worrying that I'm not going to have enough material and put too many links in. But this week has been so busy in Doom that I'm overflowing with the stuff. So there's lots to cover. There's no way that I'm going to get to it all. And so I think next week we'll do another one of these. The first headline, people have probably heard this already, but it ties into a larger story. Here's a headline. In New York City now, you can be fined for not calling people Z-E or H-I-R, which I guess is pronounced higher, if that's the pronoun that they demand you use. There's a pronoun right in there, they. And how dare they use a pronoun that wasn't previously approved? Anyway, this is the New York City human rights law, and it requires employers, landlords, businesses, professionals, everybody to use an employer's, a tenant's, a customer's, a client's preferred name, a pronoun, title, regardless, this is the best part, of the individual's sex assigned at birth. They're assigned at birth by their biology, of course, their anatomy, gender, medical adherence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So here's an example of a violation that the New York City human rights law considers worthy of punishment. Intentional or repeated refusal to use an individual's preferred name, pronoun, or title. For example, repeatedly calling a transgender woman him or Mr. after, quote, she has made it clear which pronouns and titles, quote, she uses, which is, of course, insanity. Now, one of our readers found this last week, but here's a little clip, a classic archive clip, to demonstrate the larger problem.
Hey, Pierre, use another Napoleon.
That's the 12th one today.
But I am Napoleon!
Sure you are.
I will have you executed for this!
Imagine that guy thinking he's Napoleon when I really am.
Well, that used to be a common media or television movie trope when someone was genuinely insane, locked up in the funny farm down on the sanitarium. They thought they were Napoleon. And occasionally, you know, people would humor these folks if they were so enlightened and called them by Napoleon. But nobody would say that you were forced or by law had to call a person Napoleon because he thought he was Napoleon. But now the law is upside down. You have to, if someone says they're Napoleon, by God, you have to call him Napoleon. Anything else would be phobic, racism, sexism. God knows what the hell they're calling this stuff. So this is tyranny. There's no doubt about this. This is tyranny. The government has decided that you are no longer to acknowledge reality. Actual reality, physical reality, spiritual reality. You are no longer allowed to even say it. It's forbidden speech. It's tyranny. It's a soft tyranny. This is not bamboo under the fingernails or anything like that yet. But it is definitely tyranny. It is definitely here now. And, Hillary Clinton, when this law came out, she was quoted as saying this. Obviously, she identifies as a canine. Well, that's her choice. But must we also call her a dog? Well, many people do. Anyway, there's another story I have linked here. I have more details on the blog after the in the transcript and the show notes. There is a teacher who was going to get $60,000 after coworkers won't call her they. Now, this is a woman, an insane woman, who thinks she is not a woman, but she doesn't think she's a man. She doesn't think she's a man or a woman. She thinks she's beyond these designations, and she wants to be called they. Well, district officials are going to pay this woman $60,000 in compensation because she said the employees at the school district persisted in calling her hurtful terms. What were these hurtful terms? Well, like Miss Soul, Lady, and She. So her fellow employees acknowledged reality, used reality, and were sane. And this insane woman, because she didn't get her way, cried and kicked her feet, and is now going to be paid $60,000. And that's not so bad. So what? All right, government prints money. It's free. Doesn't matter. But the real point is these employees are now going to have to call this woman by her preferred pronoun, or they are going to risk firing. And that, again, is tyranny. More after this short break. I think I left this topic a little too early. I neglected the quote. I have an article, a longer one. I'm not going to read all of this, but this artist couple is preemptively suing or involving itself in some law action because they create art for, among other things, weddings. Weddings are, of course, the matrimony between a male and a female, oriented towards family and procreation. That's the definition of marriage. The government, of course, has involved itself in marriage and feels that it can define what marriage is. This is, of course, another form of insanity and tyranny, but we'll let that pass. Now, this state that they're in, I think it's Phoenix. They're in Phoenix, so I don't know if it's the state or just the locality. Anyway, the locality, it says, it is unlawful for any owner, operator, lessee, manager, agent, or employee of any place of public accommodation to directly or indirectly display, circulate, publicize, or mail any advertisement, notice, or communication which states or implies that any facility or blah, 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 sexual orientation, gender identity, on and on and on and on. So you're not even allowed to say you don't like it. So that's absolute barring of free speech. Well, there's no argument that that's already been happening. It's going to happen more. See, once the idea, freedom of association, which was ensconced in the old way of thinking about things, meant a person could associate, or not, with whomever they liked. Not so now. Now you have forced association, and it's everywhere. You have to. You're mandated to associate with whom or whomever you do not like or who you don't want to see or who you do not agree with religiously, politically, or otherwise. And this is the creation of all sorts of tensions, racial and so on, sexual. This is, again, tyranny. It's direct tyranny. It's, you know, it's minor. It's not physically painful, necessarily, unless you're on the blunt end of an instrument, but it is absolute tyranny. It goes against the so-called founding concepts of America, at any rate, but it's not just America. It's even worse in Canada. This just came out yesterday. The pretty boy prime minister they have up there, Trudeau, isn't he a lovely thing? Anyway, he is behind a push for this. I have the headline, Canada may ban anti-transgender speech with 2 years in prison. It is now going to be, or it's proposed to be, and will likely be, if history is any judge, illegal to say you are against trans this or trans that. So now reality is not only punishable in these civil ways, you know, by fines and in these various localities. In Canada, you could go to jail for it. Isn't that wonderful? That's the probably the best way to you know, really enforce these things, because the majority of the people will see this and they'll become fearful. And they'll, of course, play along. They'll still disagree with all the trans X agenda, but they'll go along, at least tacitly, at least quietly, because they don't want to get involved in this stuff, and they certainly don't want to go to jail. Back in a moment.
Played a record out. WLS Boogie Check.
Hello, man. I'm calling about the Boogie Check.
Hey, I'm sorry. I know people on drugs are allowed on this program. WLS Boogie Check.
Check my boogie.
I am getting a boogular vibration from you. Yes, I am. Your boogular vibration registers about 9.
Oh.
Kid, are you there?
Yeah.
What is your name?
Jim Taylor.
Jim?
Kim. With a K, K-I-M.
Oh, Kim.
Yeah.
I don't like that name. Boogie Check.
Well, that little clip there was from WLS back in, I think, 1974. A guy named John Landecker, he used to, it was a rock and roll station back then, AM station out of Chicago, which we've mined before for this show. And he used to do this thing called Boogie Check. He got the idea from a friend of his who had a large mustache, who before going out would make a so to speak, boogie check of his mustache before going out and seeing the ladies. And they just had this little call-in thing. People would call up, and he would insult them, hang up on them, make jokes, this kind of thing. But this was in the days before the tape delay broadcast. They didn't, at first, have a delay in the broadcast. And, of course, somebody abused the privilege in just the way you might think they did. And this led to a big flap, and back then, these sort of things still mattered. Speech was meant to be polite in public, and when social taboos were violated, people got involved. Now, here is the point of this story. I want to show how much things have changed from then to now. And it hasn't been that long. This has only been some 40 years. This next clip, it's very difficult to hear. I boosted the volume a little bit for you. It's fuzzy. I was very lucky to get it. It is from a meeting that was held on the air of a vice president of the radio station with John Landecker, the disc jockey there, discussing the incident where somebody called in on the air and said a bad word. And here was the outcome from that.
You have a very unique responsibility entrusted to you this evening.
Well, it's a responsibility that is really a committee's decision. I have to admit that I did discuss this with the Archdiocese of Chicago,
yeah.
Cardinal Cody,
yeah.
And the ABC Board of Directors in New York,
mm-hmm.
and the entire legal department of ABC, NBC, and CBS.
And they've all okayed the Boogie Check to come back on your radio station?
Only under certain conditions.
And we are here tonight for you to read the Boogie Check bylaws.
Well, now, to some extent, you notice there they had to talk to the Cardinal in Chicago, the great religious authority of the area. Chicago was then largely Catholic, and it was certainly the largest religion. We still have these little incidents, but now they go by with, an hour, 2 hours, maybe a day's worth of interest, and then it passes on. Maybe the FCC gets involved if it's really large, but not to any great extent. Back then, This was a very serious thing, these small indiscretions. You know, everybody has heard the word before, but it just wasn't done in polite society. And it wasn't so much of a governmental thing. You notice he didn't really mention the FCC in there, but it was a societal thing. People were much politer to one another then, for lots of good reasons. Another thing, if you listen to this, you listen to a lot of these boogie checks, air checks that they have archived, you notice that if you listen carefully, or not even that carefully, that most of the callers were kids. Well, why not? I mean, they were teenagers for the most part, and because they were listening to rock music, which was and oriented towards kids, teenagers. And that was true when it started. It's still true now. But society has changed to such a level that everybody must take rock music seriously. Everybody must at least act as if it was important and interesting and good and beautiful. When, you know, it's kids' music, it's simple music, it's harsh on the ears and unpleasant for the most part. But there's nothing else that you could find in pleasant adult company nowadays. Everywhere you go, you hear rock music. You go to the grocery store, you go to the gas station, you go, you know, the parties, anywhere. It's in train stations. It's in, you go to JFK. I fly a lot out of JFK in New York City. And JetBlue has a terminal there. I usually take them. And the music is blasting, not just a soft, but it's rather loud and it's annoying, especially when the terminal is not crowded and they won't turn it down. And it's, you know, it's rock music and it's intrusive. And wouldn't it be nice if we had like Penn Station played more pleasant music to listen to, or no music at all? Wouldn't that be something? Absolutely nothing to hear. Well, our next headline is, this is the headline now. You got to pay attention. You're not going to believe it when you hear it. Sex roulette parties where one person is secretly HIV positive and nobody is allowed to use condoms are on the rise, warned doctors. That went by pretty quick. So even though if I warned you, sex roulette parties where one person is secretly HIV positive and nobody is allowed to use condoms is on the rise. These are particularly a phenomenon in Spain, of all places. And here is a Spanish psychologist remarking on the phenomenon.
But at these circuit parties spread over several days, over a weekend and a bit, unsafe sex, recreational drug abuse takes place to such an extent that I'm sure there's a massive amount of HIV transmission going on. Fortunately, we don't have circuit parties here, but if we did, we'd have the explosion. And I think, once again, the goodie bag you leave with at the end of a circuit party is STIs you didn't come in with, HIVs you didn't come in with, and perhaps drug habit and alcohol habit you didn't come in with either.
I don't know about you, but of all the strange things you hear, this is bizarre. Spiritual exhaustion is what I think causes it. And this leads to spiritual death. And that leads to orgies, where one secretly hopes to become infected with a deadly disease. Suicide by sex, which is a terrific metaphor for the dying West. This is obviously, if you know, and God knows you shouldn't, but if you do, a variant of what is called bug hunting, wherein a man seeks out sexual partnership with another man who is known to be HIV positive in the hopes that he contracts the disease. Yes, bug hunting, the virus is a bug. They want the bug. They want to be infected. These people are obviously insane. And I remember having a email exchange with a listener, a reader to the blog. Typical, very nice person, you know, in every way, but a standard academic, you know, progressive and all this sort of thing. And it was like pulling teeth, to use a cliche, to get this person to admit that bug hunting was wrong, that it was immoral. This person just did not want to do it, did not want to say anything that anybody might want to do sexually was wrong. And that's the problem here. So the doctor, you even noticed, he talked about what was wrong. Not the immorality of these orgies, no, heaven forbid, but drug habits. We don't want to develop drug habits. We don't want to move away from optimal health. Optimal health is everything to a utilitarian or a pragmatist. Optimal health is replacing the definition of just plain healthy. And that's a subtle difference, which I'll talk to about a little bit later. But it's something we can't really cover in this short program. In any case, it's bat guano insane that these people are doing this. And there's no justification for it. There's no explanation for it unless it's a spiritual one. These people have nothing left to live for, literally, except these brief moments of pleasure and thrill where, you know, they hope to contract a disease, secretly hope to contract a disease so that they can just end it all without having the courage, of course, to jump in front of a train or something equally painful. Interestingly, the CDC released a report on the HIV epidemic here in the once United States, concentrating on the South. There was a huge increase in HIV among blacks, and this is interesting because blacks used to be vehemently against homosexual behavior. Particularly blacks, much more so than whites. And I remember, and Hispanics too, I remember attending a rally. This was, oh, 4 or 5 years ago on Madison Avenue in New York. Thousands and thousands of almost entirely blacks and Hispanics demonstrating against same-sex so-called marriage. Huge demonstration. It was covered in the press, not at all, which is probably why you haven't heard of it. It completely boggled the minds of the editors of the New York Times, for instance, for they cannot say anything negative about blacks or Hispanics. And on the other hand, these blacks and Hispanics were demonstrating against something beloved to them. So they put them into a mental quandary and they just decided to say nothing whatsoever. But anyway, the propaganda has worked. And now blacks are catching up, which is probably why there's such a huge increase. It's a really large increase in the black population of men who have sex with men. The CDC itself, again, cannot bring itself to say that the acts themselves, the men having sex with men, those acts are wrong. And instead they have to say the increase is driven in part. That's the key word, driven in part by socioeconomic factors, income equality, and poverty. Also, cultural factors may play a role, such as homophobia and transphobia and racism. So somehow waves of transphobia and racism are emanating from evil whites and causing black men to develop HIV. Now, that's pretty powerful. Racism was good stuff, and so is transphobia. We all knew that. But nobody knew before the CDC confirms that it had the power to cause disease in a body. What else can you say but that you're a homophobe? Well, not for the last time, we're going to learn that there's nothing deadlier to sanity than the desire for equality. Here's a headline. This is from the Chronicle of Higher Education, which is the progressive in-group magazine, professional journal. demand surges for diversity consultants. To promote, this is a quoting now, to promote diversity, many colleges turn to an outsider, a consultant who offers to help them remedy inequities and reduce discrimination. There's a guy here named Ross who leads workshops 3 days. 3 days, count them. 1, 2, 3 days. 3 solid days of sitting on your keister listening to some snake oil salesman. Making you aware of unconscious biases you might have. Demand has surged. Now, everybody ridicules diversity at universities and safe spaces and all this kind of stuff. It does no good. We tease it here. People write excoriating articles. Even the National Review can bring itself to write articles condemning these sorts of things. But it does no good whatsoever. If anything, it just increases. Diversity increases. Diversity increases. There's nothing you can do to slow it down. There's absolutely nothing. The only thing you could do to stop it is to keep yourselves from attending a university where this is, the infection has really taken hold. Don't let your children go to these places, absolutely. But it says here. That the demand, I'm quoting, demand for such services has surged as a wave of student protests over racial and gender discrimination. You can't help but laugh. What? Racial and gender discrimination. When they're not making up the incidents, the incidents themselves that are genuine are something like somebody writes Trump 2016 in chalk on a sidewalk. I mean, this is deemed racist and, frightening and makes people feel unsafe. These people are absolutely out of their minds. They are going to be graduated with a degree. They'll be credentialed. They'll therefore think they're much more intelligent than they really are. And they'll charge into the world and themselves, many of them, become diversity consultants. And in fact, this one guy named Vasquez, he's president of the Diversity Training Group. He said, predicted the demand for his services can only grow, and of course it will. The government's employing them. Other people are employing them. He said, Trump has been fantastic for his business, and no doubt it has been. Another guy named Irvin says, the evaluation of policies, practices, and programs account for the largest share of his consultants' works. Let me just point out here again. The evaluations of policies, practices, and programs, that accounts for the largest share. So this is not actually training. This is these people getting their fingers into every possible area of the university. Looking at every written document, syllabi from various classes, in mathematics and physics and so forth, scanning and looking for anti-diversity racism and homophobia and everything like this, on and on and on. And there's no escaping. I want to stress that there's nothing that you can do. And not only is there nothing that you can do, there's nothing you should do. Any attempt to fix this by going through the usual channels only strengthens the usual channels. It gives them oxygen, so to speak. It's like we talked about last week. The Congress or the Obama administration made its toilet law, and that was bad law. And now Congress has introduced a law to counteract that law. But the whole point is these people should not be making laws on this subject at all. It's not their business. Law has nothing to do with this. This is pure sociology. I mean, it's purely a cultural matter, but they don't see that. They don't know what to do about it. So they make all these laws. That's why when you operate inside the system, you're just giving validation to the whole lawmaking process. And maybe you get a few laws gone your way and it looks good, but eventually the whole process is going to turn against you, and there's nothing I think anybody can do about it except just not to partake in it. And that's this week in Doom, a very active week. I missed half the subjects, and so I think next week we'll do another one, and maybe we'll just have to do nothing but Doom until the final collapse. Join us next week.